today we'll go into describing the boundary law for entanglement entropy in general. In the previous three classes of this week, we saw that we developed techniques to characterize entanglement entropy, and in the tutorial from yesterday, you completed this work by studying a system of one-dimensional system of free fermions at the critical point and slightly away from the critical point. So let's try to summarize what you saw or what you should have seen yesterday. So scaling of entanglement entropy in systems of free fermions in 1D, let's start with 1D. What we have is that if we plot first the dispersion relation, so we have some Hamiltonian for free fermions, we can solve the single particle energies, and then suppose we have a spectrum like this. Okay, so this is the zero, this is momentum. Single particle spectrum, then if there is a finite gap, then we can look at what the correlations in the system look like and also how entanglement entropy scales. So I'm going to plot here log of L for a correlations, first the correlations. Okay, so this is, okay, I'm plotting log of some correlator as a function that depends on the distance. And then what we see is that this correlator typically follows some straight line, but eventually starts decaying faster. And what this corresponds to is a correlation that is decaying exponentially with the distance. That's a two-point correlator. And as we look at how these correlations decay with L, we see that they are following asymptotically some exponential decay. Okay, so this straight line would correspond to a power law, but at long distances we see that there is an exponential decay. And this exponential decay becomes most clear when we reach some correlation length. So for distances on the order of the correlation length, we clearly see the exponential decay. Now if we plot on next to it the entanglement scaling, here we're gonna put the entropy. Right, so this is entanglement entropy. Then what we observe, you saw that yesterday, is that it kind of seems to follow some logarithmic behavior, but eventually it saturates. So this corresponds to an entropy that goes to a constant as a function of L. Okay, and it's no coincidence that this departure from the initial scaling occurs again at the correlation length. Okay, so in particular, if this was a critical system, which would be the second case, we'll have that there is no correlation length, and therefore we will see that we just follow the a much simpler behavior all the way. So I'm saying this was 1D gapped Hamiltonian. Now let's do the 1D gapless. Okay, and this could correspond, well, I'm gonna draw a dispersion relation here again. So imagine that as we look at single particle energies, there is some mode for which the energy is zero. It's a function of, say, momentum. And in this case, what we expect then is for the correlations in a log-log plot, correlations as a function of the distance L between two points. So in a log-log plot, what we see is that the correlations keep following a power law. So see the correlator between two points L decay as 1 over some power of L, okay? And when we look at the entanglement entropy, then we see that it follows a lock.
All the way.
Okay. So that should follow from what we studied yesterday in the lecture and also from the tutorial. As you get closer to a critical point, as you close this gap, as you transition from this situation to the other one, what you see is that the correlation length increases. And so if we consider now a dispersion relation with a smaller gap, then what we'll see is that the correlations will end up decaying exponentially, but with a larger length scale. This will occur at some length scale prime. Okay? For the entanglement entropy, then we expect something like this, that we continue to have some logarithmic growth until until a saturation occurs. And so in the limit of an infinite correlation length, then we recover this situation. Is it clear? Excellent. So what else could we say here? It turns out that, let me try this. So imagine that we have another dispersion relation. Let me draw it here, which is also critical, so also gapless. But imagine that we have a situation where, I don't know, the dispersion relation is doing something like this. So we happen to have two zero modes. Okay, and you studied this as well. That was the case that we found in the lecture. And so in this case, what we will see is that we'll find, if we look at the entropy, we'll have, again, a logarithmic scaling. But if in this case we happen to see that in the first case we had a 1 over 6 here, then in the second case we'll see that it's a 2 over 6 log L. Okay? We would see, actually, more generally, that if we have a dispersion relation which, let me see, which cuts, so we could have a dispersion relation that has some number, say, 4 zero modes, then this will result in an entanglement entropy that scales as 4 times the case when we would have 1 zero mode, okay? So with this observation, we already see that we can use the scaling of entanglement entropy in systems of free fermions to count how many zero modes we have in the spectrum. And that's kind of remarkable, because we're talking about whether the spectrum of the Hamiltonian has a gap or not, whether how many zero modes we have. And we can answer this question by looking at properties of the ground state of the system, right? We don't involve the excited states here. We are just looking at the ground state.
What would happen to the entanglement entropy if you had a degenerate ground state and a gap above that?
For a degenerate ground state?
Yeah, but with a gap above that.
So for a degenerate ground state, you may have some offset entropy. What you are saying is we don't even know what we mean by the ground state, right? So we have a linear combination of those two. So this will give you some shift in, so we would be in this setting here. Mm-hmm. And depending on the combination you take of ground states, you would follow a slightly higher line or slightly lower, but at the same correlation the length. But in all the cases, you would reach some saturation that would occur at the same correlation length. And the difference in these entropies just corresponds to, you can analyze it by seeing what linear combination you took of ground states. Here, I'm assuming that we have translation invariance in the original system and that the partition is a block of contiguous spins or sides.
Is there a way to understand why the presence of the gap has this effect?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Is there some intuitive way to understand why the gap has this effect on the entropy?
Why the gap has?
Why the presence or absence of a gap has this effect?
Has this effect. I'll have something to say about this later on. So the next section will be interpreting this, how this happens. I won't have a very conclusive answer to this, but partial answer, yes. Excellent. So I'm going to talk now about two-dimensional systems, but I'm starting a table here where I want to capture a summary of what we just discussed, I'll just focus on entropy. And the summary is that if you have a gap Hamiltonian in one dimension, right? So remember, we have a region A of length L. Then for the gap Hamiltonian, when we look at the entanglement entropy in the ground state, it scales as a constant. And when we look at the entanglement entropy for the ground state of a gapless Hamiltonian, it scales as log of L, okay? So if there are no more questions, I'll go to two dimensions. And actually, what I'll explain now is part of your homework for this week. So probably you are interested in listening. So 2D. In this case, I'm just going to focus on the entanglement entropy. The correlators follow some similar patterns. So what do we want to see here? Now we have kx, ky. I'm going to plot again the dispersion relation, or the single particle energies. And first, we're going to assume that we have, you know, this now is a two-dimensional drawing. So we need some imagination here. But all the energies, single particle energies, are in the surface, in this surface, OK? So it's a two-dimensional surface. So in this case, we have a gap. This is the gap, right? So if we have a gap, then when we plot the entanglement entropies, now it's a region. We have our lattice. And we look at the region A, right? This is A. And it's L times L. And we ask how much entropy we have in the region when the whole system is in the ground state. So it's the same question that we asked before, but now in two dimensions. Then it turns out that when the system has a gap, if we plot the entropy as a function of the linear size of this block, then what we see is a linear growth. Okay, so the entropy scales proportional to the size of the boundary of our region. As opposed to, so this is different. The number of degrees of freedom here, or the amount of potential entropy, could be for a, you know, if we repeated the exercise we did for 1D, if we try to see the scaling of in a random state of the many body system, then we would expect this to grow as L square. Okay? We're not going to repeat all the numerics. You have all the tools there if you want to do it yourself for a random state. But what we see is that ground states of gap systems in two dimensions obey, again, a boundary law. The amount of entropy in region A is only proportional to the size of the boundary of the region. OK, what happens then if we go to the gapless case? So this was gapped. And now we go to the gapless case. And in this case, what we mean, there are two possibilities. Let's look at the first one. So now imagine that the dispersion relation is such that E of k, kx, ky, okay, that there is only one place where that there is a 1-0 mode, right? So that the energy gap from the ground state to the first excited state is equal to 0. Then in this case, what we will see, what would you expect? Any guess? L log L. So that's a natural expectation from analogy to the 1D case, right? That when we have a gapless system, then there is an extra logarithmic correction. And so that's what I also would have expected. But as you will see in the homework, maybe. No, you won't see it in the homework, sorry. It happens that, well, the entropy scales again just as L, again a boundary law. Okay, so we'll see what's happening here. But that's what we see in practice. So in one dimension, by looking at the scaling of entanglement entropy, we could distinguish between gapless systems and gap systems. In two dimensions, that's not so clear, okay? Because there are gapless systems with a boundary law. But there is a second type of gapless systems, which will obey will have also this logarithmic correction. So this is ky, kx, dispersion relation. Imagine now that we have a dispersion relation that is of something like this, of this form, such that we have a one-dimensional manifold of zero modes. Okay, a Fermi surface here. So that's Fermi surface. Okay, so we have a 1D Fermi surface. So in this case, if we then look at how the entanglement of a region of linear size L scales with the linear size L, then we'll see that instead of having a straight line, there is indeed a slight modification of it. There is more, the entropy scales more than just linearly. So S of L is L, is proportional to L times log L. All right, I'm just describing a number of things, some of which you will see in the homework. So if we go back to our table, we find that in two dimensions, for a gap system, we have the entropy scales proportional to the boundary. And for the gapless case, we have two situations, could scale proportional, the entropy could scale proportional to the size of the boundary, or we could find a logarithmic correction. Right, and as I said, the difference here, if I call dFS dimension of the Fermi surface, right, if this is the dimension of the Fermi surface, when this dimension of the Fermi surface is smaller than the total dimension minus one, then we have boundary law. If the dimension of the Fermi surface is equal to the space dimension minus one, then we see a logarithmic correction. Okay? And then we could repeat the same thing for three dimensions, but I just state the results. So in three dimensions, we'll see again L square for gap systems. For gapless systems, we'll see that when the dimension of the Fermi surface is smaller than D minus one, we still have L square, and that there is a logarithmic correction when we have that the dimension of the Fermi surface is equal to 2. Here's 1. Okay. All right, so that's the big picture we get. So if we have to summarize this, we say that in general, in D dimensions, these are D space dimensions, we find two types of behavior. First, if the dimension of the Fermi surface is smaller than D minus one, then we find, so, and this corresponds to both gap and some type of gapless Hamiltonians, then we find that the entropy scales, and now let me write something a bit fancy here as the size of the boundary. Okay, so what do I mean by this? So if A is the region, then this denotes the size of the region, which is L to the D, right? The number of sides in it. So the boundary, this denotes the size of the boundary. Sorry, this denotes the boundary of A, and this is its size, and this is what scales as LD minus one, okay? So what I'm saying is that in general, in any dimensions, we find that the entropy for systems where the Fermi surface is has dimension smaller than D minus one, we find this boundary law. And just to not get confused, this means L to the D minus 1. Okay? Whereas when the dimension of the Fermi surface is equal to D minus 1, and that's Gabler's case only, then this S of L happens to scale as the size of the boundary of A times log of the size of the boundary of A. Okay? So we have a logarithmic correction. And again, this just means L to the D minus 1 log L. Okay? So that's the general result that we find for fermionic for free fermion systems. And in the next section, we'll try to understand where this is coming from, why we have this type of scaling. Are there questions? So let me say then that this is only for free fermions, but to the best of our knowledge, this holds in general, also for interacting systems. Not just interacting fermions, but also spin systems, antiferromagnetic. So yeah, you could have interacting spins, you could have bosons. All the systems that we know of end up following these rules. Okay?
What about systems that have topological
orbits? They also, these are gap systems, and they also obey a boundary law. And later today, or probably tomorrow, we'll talk about small corrections to this boundary law. We'll see that there are sub-leading corrections, which are, you know, they are not the dominant term in the scaling of the entropy, but actually they are universal and therefore very, very interesting. And part of the research nowadays is to look at these sub-leading corrections.
That I have to my system.
So I'm assuming that your system is very, very large, infinite.
Right. But let's say I can. Okay.
And what I'm saying in part is that the scaling of entanglement away from the boundaries, or you know, maybe there are no boundaries, does not, right, in the bulk, the scaling of entanglement does not depend even on your choice of boundary conditions.
But that's for a generic system?
Yeah. We can talk more later. Excellent. So in particular, I have to say that, you know, here I talk about Fermi surface, right? So this sounds like fermion systems, fermionic systems. But you can also have systems of, say, spins, that interacting spins, what's called. Let's see. Here we were talking about a Fermi gas. Right? So logarithmic corrections are expected in free fermions. But you could also add interactions, and then you could have a Fermi gas in which you have quasi-particles. So this is no longer a free system, even though at low energies it behaves as a free system, and there we also see the logarithmic corrections. And finally, there are systems of, say, what's known now as spin Bose metal. Which are systems of interacting spins in two dimensions, where there are no fermions. Okay, there are no fermions in your microscopic degrees of freedom, and nevertheless, there is a lot of work pointing out that there is some effective Fermi surface or Fermi surface for spin degrees of freedom being formed at low energies. And actually, nowadays we have reversed this. So a way of showing that such systems have something equivalent to a Fermi surface is precisely by studying how entanglement entropy scales in these systems. Okay? So entanglement is being used nowadays as a means to identify structures at low energy. All right. So a natural question that nobody's asking is how do we know about interacting case, right? For free fermions, we've been able to explore very large systems. But for interacting systems, we saw also during this course that it's very hard for us to go to very large systems. We managed to do 20 spins in one dimension, but in two dimensions, that's really very small. So how are we going to investigate these things? And the answer is we don't know. In general, we cannot investigate large systems, but there are exceptions. So first, we can use quantum field theory arguments. We can take quantum field theories, and there we can also define the entanglement entropy after you discretize the theory. You introduce some ultraviolet cutoff. So you can make this analysis again, right? In a field theory, these entropies are infinite from the start, but if you introduce a proper cutoff, then you make them finite, and then you see how the entropy scales as you change the size of your region A. The other thing is there are exactly solid models out there beyond free fermions or free bosons, and there are also integrable models for which you can study large systems, and again, they obey, they fall in this classification. And finally, we have other numerical techniques, say quantum Monte Carlo, which in some systems, when there is no sign problem, you can use to explore large sizes. And again, we obtain the same type of results. Okay, so this concludes the description of what we observe. And now let's move into trying to understand what this all may mean. So 9.2, we're going to talk about the toy model for the boundary law. Okay. And so first we start with the case where we have a strict boundary law. Meaning no logarithmic correction. And so I'm just going to describe some state on the lattice. One could argue that it's the ground state of some local Hamiltonian, but this is just a toy model, okay? So I'm going to assume that on each side, I have two spin degrees of freedom. This defines, so each circle here is a spin 1/2 degree of freedom, and I'm going to consider a lattice of side sides. And in my toy model here, I'm going to assume that the ground state, let's see which color, that the ground state is a collection of singlets between one spin on one side and a spin on the other side. So this is going to be a toy model wave function. So what do we mean by this drawing? Well, this is just a drawing for a state of two spin 1/2 that could be 1, say 1, 2, minus 2, 1, using the notation that we've been using before. Okay, so that's some entangled state that is entangling one spin of this side with one spin of the next side. So this is a very simple wave function. You could actually build a Hamiltonian that would have a local Hamiltonian that would have this wave function as the ground state. But let's look now at the entanglement scaling in this very simple toy model. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to consider some region. Region is defined by a number of sides. Suppose this is my region A. Okay. And I'm going to look at how much entanglement I have between region A and the rest of the system. Okay, can somebody tell me how much entanglement we have there? So remember that the entanglement that we have in here, so the entanglement of this guy when we partition this so that this is A and this is B, the entanglement of this guy is equal to 1 EBIT, okay? And this comes from the fact that we have, this is the entropy of a 1/2, 1/2 probability distribution. So with that in mind, can somebody tell me how much entanglement we have between A and the rest of the system? 2. Why 2?
because we are cutting two guys, right?
So in order to separate A from B, right, A is connected to B through this entangled state and this entangled state.
Excellent. So
the entropy is a function of L. How much is L? L is equal to 2. So L equal to 2, the entropy happens to be 2.
And now the big question, what happens if I change the size of L?
So the size of A, sorry. What happens if I now consider that A goes from here to here?
Okay. And of course,
due to laziness, I did not continue to draw more sides here, but they are there. And so on.
Okay. So now we have a larger region. How much entanglement do we have between
A, which is the larger region, and the rest of the system?
Yeah, you are on a roll today, huh? Thanks.
So S for L equal to 3 is again 2, okay?
So what is happening here? It doesn't matter how large this block is, okay? It's when we try to separate the block from the rest of the system, we realize that we always had one singlet on each boundary. Right? And how large is the boundary? Well, the boundary of region A is always 2 points, right? So we have a point here, a cut here, and a cut here. And that leads automatically to an amount of entropy which does not depend on the size of L. Okay? So I know this is pretty simple. Let's just look at exactly the same but in two dimensions. And that's where I have to spend the next 50 minutes drawing something. Which we'll cut a bit short so that we can move on. So I'm imagining now that I have a two-dimensional lattice. Where each side is made of 4 spin 1/2 degrees of freedom. And these degrees of these spins are connected with nearest neighbors, as before. Okay? And again, this is just a toy model. But we want to argue that it captures the essence of the boundary law. Nice. Okay. So now I could ask, let me take a block. Here, I'm going to define A to be this part here. I'm going to call this A. Okay? And we've learned how to count the entropy in A, right? We just need to see how many singlets we are cutting across its boundary. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
So now we have that the entropy for L equal to 2, L here is the linear size, right? L is equal to 2 in this block. We see that the entropy is equal to 8, the number of singlets we are cutting. But now if we take the same wave function and we consider a larger region, say this region here, right, this is going to be A prime. So in this case, we have that L, the linear size is 3, 3 sides times 3 sides. Then, well, let's count how many singlets we're cutting this time. 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 3. So this is 12. Okay? And we see what's happening here. That what we have is S of linear size L is equal to 4 times, this is one phase, 2, 3, and 4, times L. Okay? Because we are cutting L singlets on each phase. Okay? So this toy model, this very simple wave function for which we could find a local ground state such that this is the ground, sorry, a local Hamiltonian such that this is the ground state, this already obeys the boundary law.
There was a question?
I mean, I'm able to construct a wave function that where like every state is entangled with every other state in which the boundary law is, let's say, L. So like it seems like that you can construct any wave function for any boundary law that you like.
So what I'm doing is I'm building a specific wave function for which we find the boundary law. The one that you suggested with, where everybody was entangled with everybody, that would not obey the boundary law. That would be a bulk law, right? The amount of entropy in size in region A would be proportional to the size of A.
I guess the question is, why are these wave functions more likely to be candidate ground states than the other wave functions?
I think that the way we want to reason here is that we've seen the ground states obey a boundary law and sometimes a logarithmic correction, of which I'm going to talk next. And now what we're trying to do is we're trying to find simple wave functions that also obey a boundary law. And now we want to conclude from here that maybe ground states are similar to this simple toy model. Okay. So in general, the ground state of a local Hamiltonian is not going to look like a collection of singlets between nearest neighbor sites. It will be much more complicated. But we get the picture. The important part here is that entanglement is connecting local, is local. It's essentially local. Right? The entanglement is between these spins and those spins which are close to these spins, not with spins which are far, far away. The model that you were considering, where all the spins were entangled with the others, with all the others, with no notion of locality, that would lead to this bulk law, and that's precisely the point that we have seen numerically that ground states are not of that form, right? So the conclusion is that we believe that the boundary law is telling us that there is some degree of locality in the entanglement between the different degrees of freedom. Okay, so that's what we're learning here. That there is some degree of locality in entanglement, and that leads to the boundary law. Okay, so if I was in a better mood, I would draw the same in three dimensions. And I'm in a pretty good mood, but I'm still not going to do it. Okay, but you know, I know you have a lot of free time. So do this, and then many, many times, then you cut, and again, it's obvious, right, that if you have only short-range entanglement, when you try to separate region A from the rest of the system, you'll be cutting a number of entangled states, which is proportional to the size of the boundary of the region. Okay, so that would explain the boundary law. Okay, just to have some intuition there. And next week we'll exploit this intuition much more. Now, what about the logarithmic corrections? So logarithmic corrections are a bit more complicated, but we also can play around with a toy model. So B, logarithmic corrections. And what do we have there? I'm going to invoke scale invariants here. I'm going to try to see different notions of what scale invariants could be in this setting. Remember, we saw in one dimension that the logarithmic correction occurred at quantum critical points. These are scale invariants. So let's try to see how we can build a toy model that somehow reflects this idea of scale invariants. And I have to agree that this toy model is a bit esoteric, but you know, be patient and it will be fine. So one dimension, I'm going to assume now that I have these sides, and I want to have 8, 16, I don't know, some number. Okay, so we have this. I think I did this properly. So imagine that this is our infinite spin chain, again 1D, and this is our region A, which I've been drawing in color in red. So let me try to be consistent here. Wow. Sorry. So this is region A. Okay. And now we're going to assume the following. We're going to assume that this toy model that I'm not going to specify a lot contains short-range correlations as the ones we saw. Okay. So there are some short-range correlations connecting nearest neighbor spins or nearest neighbor sites. Okay. But now, in this case, we have that the length of our block, so that's 1D, that the length of our region A is 8 sites. Now what I could do is I could think about the same system. So I have to draw this again. But where I'm going to look at it from some distance, and so I'm going to apply some renormalization group transformation where every 2 sites become a single site. Okay. And we have still the same block as before. But now if we look at this block, we have that effectively it's so length, effective length of this block has become 4, right? Effectively, it has 4 sites. Every 2 original sites have become 1 effective site. And by scale invariance, I'm going to say that at this length scale, we have also contribution of some amount of entanglement linking these effective sites. So let's do, green. Okay. And now I'm going to do this again. I'm going to consider the same system, but with an effective length equal to 2. So this means 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 4. Now I'm going to assume that I've blocked this twice, so I'm going to use maybe purple for this. But this is our region A. And have this blocking. And again, by scale invariance, I'm going to assume that there is some effective degrees of freedom that are entangled inside and outside. OK? So this is the toy model. I know it's not very precise. One could try to build this explicitly. It would be a bit complicated. But that's not the point here. What I'm trying to say is that imagine that the entanglement entropy of a block of the region A is made of contributions from different length scales. That's what we're trying to do here. So from the first length scale, we're going to say that we're cutting, again, 2 maximum entangled states. So we get a contribution of 2 e-bits. From the next length scale, we get 2 e-bits. And from the next length scale, we get 2 e-bits. So when we put them together, we have 6 e-bits of entanglement. Okay. Okay. So now let's do this in general. So imagine that we have L sites. So imagine that this was for L equal to 8, but generically, suppose we have L sites and that this is some power of 2, then we would do, so at that length of scale, right, so L effective equal to L, the starting point, then we'll have that there's a contribution of 2 e-bits of entanglement. Now we cut, so we have L effective equal to L half, right? So after the first coarse-grained step, we'll have also some amount of entanglement, which is going to be 2 e-bits extra. And so we do this L over 4,
four times, and we do this a few times until we get that L effective is equal to L divided by L over 2, or equal to 2.
That's what we had down here. Okay. And so when we do that, we get, and I don't know what I wrote here. Okay. So how many times do we have to do this? Well, this is, if you look at how many times we have here, every time we're dividing L by 2, we can do this log 2 times. So we have log 2 contributions to entanglement, right? There are log 2 relevant length scales. In this case, there were 3, in general, log 2 of L. Okay, that contribute to entanglement. So when we add all these numbers together, right? If you add all these numbers together, you get 2 log 2L. And so we just got our logarithmic correction to the boundary law. Okay? So again, what's the intuition here? The intuition is that each length scale in the system provides some entanglement between region A and the rest. And how many length scales are relevant here? Well, we start with the size of A, and we keep shrinking A effectively until we're left with just two sides in it. Okay? So the larger the block, the more length scales will contribute to the entanglement. That right. Imagine that. So that's perfect question. So imagine that was the next step, right? Imagine that you have you don't have a scale invariant. You have a finite correlation length. What's going to happen is that as long as this effective length here, as long as the size of these blocks is smaller than the correlation length, there will be entanglement. But suppose that entanglement is only up to certain correlation length, then we are, say, you're going to miss, this one is no longer going to be there, right? So this means that regardless of the size, so if you consider a small region, you'll have this contribution. If you consider a larger region, you'll have this contribution and this contribution. If you consider a much larger region, you again only have this contribution and that contribution. Okay, maybe I can draw this. I'm saying, if this is A, now we're going to consider several cases. Okay, and then in the first case, we only have this contribution. The second case, we have this contribution, short-range entanglement, and also this contribution. Right. So we're following the critical case. But now suppose that the correlation length is on the order of the green guys. So in the next step, when we consider an even larger region, we'll have these contributions, and that's it. Okay. So what we see is that the entanglement will increase as a function of L for a while, but will hit some distance, namely the correlation length, after which as we increase the size of the region, the amount of entanglement does not increase. Okay? So this gives us some intuitive understanding of what this logarithmic correction is. Okay. So are there more questions? So if there are no more questions, I'm going to risk it and do the two-dimensional case, which is, as you remember, a bit more complicated. Maybe here.
When you increase the system size such that it's larger than the correlation, then the one here.
That's right. In one dimension, once the region A is larger than the correlation length, you get this boundary law, the saturation. So remember, boundary law in one dimension is, well, the size of the boundary of a region is 2 points. It's a constant. Doesn't depend on the size, right? So boundary law in one dimension means the entropy becomes a constant. is independent of the size of the region. So what we are saying is when we are at criticality, there is this logarithmic correction. But if there is a finite correlation length, so off criticality, as you hit, as the size of the region becomes of the order of the correlation length, you'll go from growth of the entropy to a saturation. And that was all contained in the scaling up there of the entanglement entropy, right? First growth and then saturation. All right, so let's try this with two dimensions. And now the first thing I have to do is to relax a little bit the drawing, my drawing ambition. So what I'm going to do, right, we want to see these logarithmic corrections in two dimensions. And so again, we are going to we're going to try to relate to use some notion of a scale invariance to build a toy model that would lead to this logarithmic correction. And we'll have a surprise, which corresponds to the fact that also gapless systems in two dimensions may obey a boundary law without corrections. So now what I want to do is I'm going to draw some region. So this is my region, and it's included in a very large lattice. Okay, so for consistency, I'm going to use red here. And what I've done is that instead of drawing each side as a circle, now each side is going to be one of these squares. Okay, so my region A is this. Okay. And there are other sides. So what I was saying right now is that my side is a square. Okay, the sides on this lattice. Just don't want to draw every side. All right, so now if we have short-range entanglement, what do we expect? Well, we expect that on this side there will be some entanglement with nearest sides across the boundary. And the same everywhere, right? So I should draw it everywhere. Okay? And how much entanglement is this contributing? Well, we're saying linear size equal to 8. We have maybe I'll do it here. With linear size equal to 8, we have that the amount of entanglement is going to be 4 times, there are 4 faces, times 8, right? I'm just counting how many singlets I'm cutting, and I see that there are 32 singlets, 8, 8, 8, and 8. Okay, now I go to the next length scale. So how do I draw this? So this is supposed to be the same. But now I'm coarse graining directly. I use some green. So I'm coarse graining the sides. I'm taking every 4 sides becomes a single side. Okay. So this represents the same region A after the coarse graining transformation. If you want, you can see here the initial sides. All right. And now what I'm saying is, well, let's assume by scale invariance, let's try to define some notion of scale invariance, that these sides are also entangled with neighboring sides. I guess region, this is region A still. And we have entanglement across the boundary, entanglement at that particular length scale. Okay? So for this is effective size, the effective length linear size. Effective linear size now is 4. And we see that we get how many? 4 times 4. So 4 faces, and each face has 4 4 EBITs, right? 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we get this contribution. And now I do this one more time. And this is violet. So if I further constrain the lattice,
remember this is region A. Then I look at entanglement at this length scale. By scale invariants, I'm assuming that there is also entanglement at this length scale. And what do I get? I get that for this length scale, which is effectively two sides, I get 4 times 2, okay? You see what's happening here, right? As we constrain the system, we still get an amount of entropy from each length scale proportional to the boundary. But this boundary effectively is shrinking, right? The boundary here had 8 units, 8 sides. The boundary here effectively has 4 sides. Here, 2 sides, okay? So now, if we add these contributions together, we see that this is 4 times, and then here we could write this as 4 times 8, and then 1 plus 1/2 plus 1/4, okay? I'm just preparing this to discuss the general case. We have linear size L. In the case of linear size L, at this length of scale, we obtain 4 times L, right? We just obtain a contribution to the total entanglement entropy, which is proportional to the boundary at that length of scale. But then when we have effective length becomes, in the next step, effective length becomes L over 2. And so the amount of entanglement contributed becomes 4 times L over 2. And we have all these effective lengths contributing to entanglement. And you keep doing that, and then eventually you get to effective length scale 2. And this contributes an amount of entanglement, which is 4 times 2. Okay? I just generalized what we just saw here. And what do we see? Well, there are, again, log 2L contributions. You can do this log 2L times. You can divide L by half log 2L times before you get number 2. Right? I'm assuming that L is some power of 2. But now what we see is that if we add these contributions, we see that, well, it's the sum of them is 4L, and then we have a 1 plus a 1/2 plus a 1/4, etc. Okay? And this is not a good place. Oh, but I can lift this. Okay. So you see, we have local contributions, but they are not the same, right? The short length of scales, these ones were contributing to the entanglement entropy twice as these ones, and these ones were contributing twice as these ones, and so on. So what we find is that we have log L contributions, but the first one is order 1, the second is 1/2, 1/4, etc., times 4L. So this thing here, you can add it together, it's always smaller than 2, okay? You can add all this. So what is the result? That the entropy, okay, it's scaling as some constant times L, right? This number is around 2. Let's approximate it by 2. So what we're saying is this is on the order of 8L, okay? So we've used the same notion of scale invariance that we use in one dimension. In one dimension, we got the logarithmic correction. In two dimensions, we just failed to get the logarithmic correction. Okay? And I think I'll continue tomorrow because it's time to finish. So tomorrow what I will do is I will apply a slightly different notion of a scale invariance, a generalized notion of a scale invariance, and we'll recover the logarithmic correction. And then we will also look at entanglement and universality, how we can use entanglement to characterize universal features of your many-body system. In particular, we'll look at quantum criticality and also topological order. And then we'll talk a bit about entanglement spectrum, and that will be it for the second week.